Okay, this coming Shabbos in Chutz La'aretz, we're going to have the opportunity to read Parsha Shmini. It's also the day before Rosh Chodesh Iyar, which is a two-day Rosh Chodesh, which will begin on Sunday and carry over into Monday. And so this week we will look at Parsha Shmini. So of course, Parsha Shmini begins with a command to Aaron. Kach lecha egel ben bakar lechatas, take an egel as a chatas. And Rashi mentions that this egel, this calf, was an atonement for the cheta egel. And why does Aaron bring a chatas to atone for the chet, while the people, in a couple of psukim later, are told to bring an ola? What's the difference between the two? So HaRav Belsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, explains that a chatas is brought for a sin that one performs. When a person does a sin in action, he brings a chatas. An ola, on the other hand, atones for a sin that takes place in people's minds. If you sin b'machshava, you bring a korban ola. So Rabelsky adds that the people needed to atone for their role in the ego. They thought that kizem Moshe ish lo yadano mehayalo. They believed that Moshe Rabbeinu needed to be replaced, and they wanted Aaron to go ahead and replace him. The sin, therefore, by the people was in the thought. Aaron is always identified not as the one who had sinful intent or thought with the ego, but rather Al Asher Asu Asa Ego Asher Asa Aaron. Aaron was the one who formed the ego, and for that he gets punished. And of course, thereafter we come to the terrible episode of Nadav and Avihu. And of course, after Nadav and Avihu die, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Aaron, his brother, and he says, "This is what God says when He said, 'Bikrovaya Kadesh, with my holy ones I shall be sanctified.'" And Rav Avram Rivlin Shalita, the former Mashgiach in Keren Biavne, noted that it's interesting that when one takes all of the Chazal statements about the sin of Nadav and Avihu, what exactly it was that they did wrong, one comes to one commonality, that the people acted in their own interest instead of Hashem's. And it becomes odd that they become known as Bikrovai, God's holy ones. And how does that happen? How does somebody who is assumed to be a Baal Gaiva, how could such a person be a Karov, a relative of Hashem? So Rav Rivlin used to quote the Netziv, who explains that the Eish Kodesh, a fire of holiness that's discussed here, is really the fire of Hislavos, of the desire to express a love and a affiliation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's in the description of the love of Hashem. Now Hashem appreciates that energy, but He insists that it be channeled in the proper way, the way that He desires. One who doesn't do so is merely doing what he wants, not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Even though the intent is in the right place, and that makes you a Karov of Hashem, a relative of God, it's still a disaster. And as a result, you get punished. A person can run into a way of punishment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu points that out to Moshe, and Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take it to heart. Still, Aaron's response, Vayidom Aharon. Aaron was silent. And the Medrash tells us that Rachel Imenu was silent, and her children engaged in the same silence. She knew that she had been switched with Leah, and she learned to be quiet. Binyamin knew that Yosef had been sold, and he learned to stay quiet. Shaul HaMelech, a descendant of Binyamin, was appointed king and was anointed king, and he was silent until the time that Shmuel HaMelech decided to make the declaration. Later, Esther is told to maintain her silence. Lo yigida Esther es ama ve'es molad tashir. So those who engage in silence, says the Medrash in Parshas, in Sefer Bereishis, points out that those who engage in it, it becomes a family trait. But Ravobi Zatzal explains that sometimes silence can be a more powerful tool than words itself. Silence denotes acceptance of the divine, and Aaron HaKohen mastered it. One who cannot manage to master the power of silence is never able to fully appreciate anything that he experiences, because that person who can't master silence feels the need to take whatever it is that one experiences and categorize it. Letting something seep in is a more introspective and deeper level of understanding of life. Ravobi Zatzal adds that silence and solitude must go hand in hand. Taking the time for introspection provides a person a chance to get to know himself and to get to know the world around him. Vayidom Aharon. There's an opportunity for the person to be able to go ahead and engage. Rabbi Leibel Sheinbaum pointed out that afterwards, Levim are given, the Kohanim are given special instructions. Rashechem al Tefromu bigdeim lo tefromu, right? Don't rip your clothing. And Rav Leibel Sheinbaum of Cleveland points out that in order not to interfere by making a grief on the day of the inauguration of the Mishkan, Hashem tells Nadav and Avihu, remaining brothers, Elazar and Isamar, not to display the normal signs of mourning. And Sefer Achinuch explains that Kohanim in general are prohibited from going into the Mikdash with a sense of dishevelment, with long hair, out of respect for the Beis HaMikdash and the Avodah which they're supposed to perform. And this also applies to the clothing worn by the Kohanim that can't be torn. So Rav Sheinbaum adds that since we no longer have the Beis HaMikdash, then it should be, as we read in Yechezkel, Vahi Lohem LeMikdash Ma'at, that it should transfer over to our shuls. If we would appreciate the value of tefillah, our esteem for the Beis HaKnesses as a whole would rise in the as a result. Later, Moshe Rabbeinu gets involved in a disagreement about eating certain karbanos. And of course, Vayishma Moshe Vayita Beinav, Rashi comments that Moshe wasn't embarrassed to admit that he had heard exactly what Aaron had told his children, and that he shamati v'shachachti. And he wasn't embarrassed, lo bosh, he wasn't embarrassed to say such a thing. So Rav Shimshon David Pinkus Atzal points out that the true greatness of man is not that he never makes a mistake, but rather that he's willing to see his errors and learn from the mistake. Pinkus says this is like a man who has a beautiful car with all the bells and whistles, a luxury vehicle. It may look great, but if it lacks a solid set of brakes, it won't be a source of luxury. Rather, ultimately, it becomes a source of tragedy. A truly great individual is the one who's able to slow down, to stop, to redirect, and recalculate. Vayishma Moshe. Moshe heard about it. He stopped. Vayitav be'enav. And it becomes something good in his eyes. That's what makes the individual so great. Towards the end of the parsha, we spend a lot of time on the animals that are and the other means of kashas in the sedra. Zos hachaya asher tochlu, the Torah tells us at the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph and Pasuk Beis, this animal you can eat, and Rashi explains that Moshe literally showed Bnei Yisrael every single animal, every bird, and every insect, and told them whether that was a kosher or non-kosher insect. And so why does Hashem need to show Moshe each and every one? And why does Moshe then need to show each one to Bnei Yisrael? Why don't we just rely on general rules and principles? So Rav Shteinman Zatzal explains that Moshe understood that there would be times when genetic engineering or other technological advances might look like it would skirt the rule, rendering something mutter into something asur, or something that would be asur, rendering it into mutter. In our times, we see this quite often, where somebody assumes that a lab meat is by definition mutter. In order to prevent this from being the case, Moshe shows each creature to the people so as to prevent any mistake in the future. We have to go ahead and see, ezeh tochlu, ezeh lo tochelu. We have to have the opportunity to understand the not only the general klolim, but the specificity to make sure that our mouths and our insides stay holy in order to serve Hashem. At the end of the parasha, Hashem provides a summation statement. Ki ani Hashem hamala eschem mi'eretz Mitzrayim. I'm Hashem who has taken you up from the land of Mitzrayim. V'yisem kedoshim ki kadosh ani, and you should be holy because I'm holy. And Rashi quotes Rabbeinu Yishmael, who explains that the use of the words Asher helisicha mi'eretz Mitzrayim, right, that I took you up from the land of Mitzrayim instead of taking you out of Eretz Mitzrayim, teaches us that even if there's only one reason for Yetzias Mitzrayim, that we shouldn't have to eat shrutzim, that would have been a reason enough to take you out. Of course, that's a little difficult to understand because even the non-Jews don't eat bugs. So why is that such a big deal that this was the one reason to take you out of Mitzrayim? So Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal explains that while the non-Jews don't eat bugs, the reason why a non-Jew doesn't eat a bug is because it's aesthetically unappealing. We're told to keep away from eating shrotzim because we listen to the word of Hashem. And so therefore we need to check for things that are visible, but we also have to realize that we may not be able to see, there are things that we may not be able to see, but are visible. If that's the case, just because we're not sick of them doesn't all of a sudden make them mutter. We have a responsibility to know that that we do things because our Kadosh Baruch Hu told us to do so. We follow because Hashem insisted that it be so. Finally, as I noted before, since Rosh Chodesh is on Sunday and Monday, that means that Shabbos will be laning the Haftorah of Machar Chodesh. And of course, Shaul HaMelech turns to Yehonasan, his son, and he says, Madua lo ba ben Yishai hayom, macharo hayom, lecho lechem. Right? Why didn't the son of Yishai come yesterday or today to break bread? And of course, why does Shaul HaMelech refer to David HaMelech as ben Yishai, while Yehonasan keeps referring to him as David, as a person who has a name? So Rabbi Yamin Levo, the Rav of Verobi, explains that calling someone as Ben Yishai, or Ben Heihei, or Ben Bagbag, diminishes the individual's contribution to the world. It devalues him for himself and merely makes him a product of his parent. He adds, maybe that's why Kalev was able to silence the people when he was met by the mob that was attacking Moshe Rabbeinu when the Meraglim came back. As the Medrash notes, Kalev jumped up and said, is this the only thing that Ben Amram did? And immediately Kalev gets the people to be silent very, very quickly. What silenced the people? Asks Rabbi Yamin Levo. And he answers that it's very simple. The people expected that what would follow would be an attack. They got quiet to hear what Kalev was going to say. Instead, Kalev responds with strength and with vigor as he defends Moshe Rabbeinu. And the people get really upset at him as well. Sometimes in life we have to be able to appreciate who we are and what our contributions are, not merely as children of parents. We have to appreciate our own value and our own contributions to society. If we develop the ability to do so, not only will we merit to be a zechus based on the zechus avos, but we will continue to be something greater, a nation that's worthy of the title Beglal Avos Toshia Banim, that in the merit of the forefathers, the children will certainly be able to be successful. V'savi Geula Libnei B'neihem, this will lead to the coming of the Geula to the great grandchildren of the Avos, as we get to a situation where we will be able to get to the Yom Shekulo Shabbos Umnucha L'Chayei HaOlamim, a Shabbat Shalom to all.